that this was come up with, this whole idea of Skidmark's disease, and it's totally
yes.
what's going on right now. Rather than looking for the cause of any problems, and, you know, something as simple as putting up stop signs being the obvious answer, you know, they end up coating the streets with Teflon. And that's exactly
yes.
what we've done in this country, and the medical
it's
mafia
a,
is controlling
it's a perfect
the whole
parallel thing. Of the. It's a perfect parallel of the all diseases are treated by treating the symptom approach with a drug approach to medical, or actually disease management rather than health care. So
once again,
I thank you, and I'm going to go ahead and get off the line. Thank you for your program.
Well,
right,
thank you for calling in. We're actually out of time, but I want to just say God bless you for what you've done. You see, folks, here you have three doctors on one show that are all doing the right thing. So this is very good news. I encourage all of you to tell your friends about this program. You can listen to the archives on bbsradio.com. And thank you so much, Dr. Fitt, for being on the show, for being who you are, and doing what you're doing.
Oh, you're very welcome. Glad we
okay.
got in touch with each other.
Yes, me too. Okay, we'll be in touch, and have a great night, everybody. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
Welcome to all. My name is Anzra, and I am the host of this program, 1 Hour with Anzra. The views expressed on this broadcast are not endorsed by BBS Radio, its staff, or management, but represent only the views of the host, guests, and callers. Also, the views expressed are not intended to diagnose, treat, psychiatric advice, or replace appropriate professional intervention. My goal is to express what I would do if I was in your situation. After much research and many years of experience in personal application, I consult with clients and teach a variety of methods and spiritual modalities to accomplish the living and uplifting of life. There is rarely a time that I recommend a course of action that I myself have not used successfully to accomplish my own goals and dreams. There have been many times, though, that I have strongly encouraged my clients to seek professional intervention, and I have worked with the professionals, and together we assist these persons on to a higher place in their relationships. Well, welcome again this week, and first I'd like to discuss a little bit about what we talked about last week when we were talking about Einstein's theory of relativity and how it related to manifestation, to dream, to dare, and to do. And Dr. Rebecca Carley, who has the show before me, What's Ailing America, gave me one of her write-ups that she had done a few years earlier. And I'm going to read to you a part of it because it really, really brings home what we have been talking about. And it will relate to what we're going to talk about this week, toxic relationships. Now, she writes, in the practice of energy medicine, diagnosis now involves delving into whatever is decreasing the life force of the patient. The patient knows what is ailing them. Only the realization of the cause will lead to the healing. Thus, only the patient can bring about their own cure. It is the job of the curist to help the patient along that search within, utilizing therapies which increase the vibration of the life force, such as chiropractic, acupuncture, and all of the energy, non-toxic biological therapies, and even band-aids, quote-unquote, when required. We can heal what ails America by healing one individual at a time. In the study of energy medicine, the student will learn how to know and to create his own reality by causing an action of the conscious on the subconscious. In traveling this path, the student will leave the era of belief in theories such as that of Einstein, whose theory of relativity states that E equals mc squared, and enter the knowing stated in Hippocrates, actuality of reality, where E equals M, the equation for creation. Since the speed of thought is instantaneous, it drops out of the equation. Therefore, E equals will energy, M equals that which you so manifest. Such realization leads the student to the creation of not only a state of wellness, but to bliss as one creates that which is now in vibrational equilibrium with. To embark on the inner journey required to heal oneself, one has to realize that one has been living in a box created by those who wish to control, those who specialize in keeping our eye off the tennis ball, rather focused on the distraction of the moment. To overstand that box and see oneself being limited by the ever-encroaching walls of that box, one will not only heal oneself, but start to examine all those other tennis balls whose avoidance is holding the walls of that box together. When these walls, including dis-ease and their creators, have been exposed, they will fall under their own weight, and humanity will then remove the chains from its consciousness. Wellness will then be realized to be a state of expanding consciousness to a vibrational state in tune with all of nature and her natural laws. Very interesting, Rebecca. Rebecca realized this and wrote this about a year and a half before some articles were published similar, and some scientists had been working on just this very thing. And I'm sure if any of you out there would be interested in getting a copy of the Hippocrates article, Energy Medicine, The Science of Restoring Vibrational Frequency of Your Life Force by Treating Your Body Electric, I'm sure that Dr. Carly would be more than willing to send you a copy. And as she ends it, so be it. It is so. And that is quite a state. Well, as we spoke about many, many different things last week on the first show, this week I had several consultations with former clients who had heard the broadcast last week and decided to reconnect, and a couple of them were referrals from present clients, and they encouraged me to talk more about toxic relationships that they have experienced and seen so many around them, and they could now see for themselves the different life they were leading since they finally decided to end the disempowerment. That disempowerment that completely overshadowed their existence with the toxic partner that they allowed to overwhelm their own life space. See the similarities between what Dr. Carly wrote. I don't feel the need at this moment to go into lengthy explanations about what constitutes a toxic relationship. Most everyone involved in one out there pretty much knows what causes it. And by the end of the night, if you don't know, you will have plenty of reference to find out what does. Instead, what I plan to do tonight is I'm going to bring to you a series of statements that we can score to see where your relationship stands at this time and place in your own life. The answers are almost always, often, rarely, and never. If you all folks want to get a piece of paper and a pencil, this will be very interesting. You'll find out what kind of a relationship that you really do have. The answers, again, are almost always, often, rarely, and never. Scoring this is super easy. Almost always equals 1 point. Often equals 2 points. Rarely equals 4 points. And never equals 6 points. Okay, now, if you answer number 25 of these of this series in anything except almost never, or excuse me, almost always, you're going to have to add 15 points to your total. Now, let me tell you a little bit where this came from, and it's from a book called Toxic Relationships, How to Regain Lost Power in Your Relationship. The author is Kimberly J. Brasher, BSJD, author, attorney, and former Mrs. America. And she has a most interesting book that I recommend highly to you. So why don't we begin with a test right now? And this test right now is for those of you who have a partner or mate, girlfriend, boyfriend, that type of thing. This is for those involved in romantic or sexual relations. Number one, my spouse emotionally supports me in all areas when I'm in life, when I'm upset, stressed out, or in pain. Almost always, often, rarely, or never. Number two, I can disagree with my spouse or partner without upsetting him or her. Almost always, often, rarely, or never. Number three, my spouse is sensitive and respectful of my feelings and my needs. Almost always, often, rarely, or never. Number four, my spouse freely gives money to me without questioning me what it's for. Always, often, rarely, never. Number five, my spouse easily praises me outside of the time of sexual relations. Almost always, often, rarely, or never. Number six, when my spouse gets really angry with me, he, almost always, often, rarely, or never, can control his anger. My spouse is open to me, number seven, about his or her weaknesses and we are emotionally very close, almost always, often, rarely, or never. Number 8, my spouse encourages me to have my own friends and activities outside of our relationship, almost always, often, rarely, or never. Number 9, my spouse is completely respectful of me during sex, and I am at ease with his or her methods and requests. Always, often, rarely, and never. Number 10, my spouse consults with me before making large purchases and investments. Always, often, rarely, and never. Number 11, my spouse is easy to plan and schedule activities with. Always, often, rarely, or never. Number 12, my spouse easily controls his temper with me or with the kids. Almost always, often, rarely, and never. Number 13, I think my spouse truly loves himself or herself. Almost always, often, rarely, and never. My spouse gives freely of his emotions to me to better our relationship. Always, often, rarely, or never. Number 15, my spouse acts like he trusts me. Always, often, rarely, or never. Number 16, my spouse admits his or her mistakes and easily says, I'm sorry, when wrong. Almost always, often, rarely, or never. When I tell or ask my spouse or partner to do something, he or she will do it willingly and without conflict. Almost always, often, rarely, and never. Number 18. My spouse makes me feel like I can do everything right for him or her. Almost always, often, rarely, and never. Number 19, my spouse stops himself or herself before criticizing me or saying something verbally abusive to me. Almost always, often, rarely, or never. Number 20, my spouse likes me to be in charge instead of always him or her. Always, often, rarely, or never. Number 21, in a crisis, my spouse, always, often, rarely, or never, acts without getting angry or upset. Number 22, our relationship gives my life peace, almost always, often, rarely, or never. Number 23, my spouse puts me, my needs, above his or her buddies, activities, and hobbies. Almost always, often, rarely, or never. Number 24, my spouse listens and communicates with me without conflict. Almost always, often, rarely, or never. Number 25, very important, people. My spouse prevents all forms of physical abuse in our home, to include hitting, slapping, pushing, and or shoving. Almost always, often, rarely, or never. Number 26, I would, almost always, often, rarely, or never, see my spouse throw objects at me, the wall, or at the children. Well, that about does it. That tells you a lot right there in this. And I hope out there everybody took this test and are really thinking about the answers. Now, to score, and don't forget, you have to add 15 points if number 25, you answered it in any way except always. Okay? The higher the test score in this, the higher the test score, the more toxic the relationship. And again, the scoring is very easy. The almost always is 1 point, often is 2 points, rarely 4 points, and never is 6 points. Add it up, folks, and see what's happening. Now, if you've added this up and you have 34 or under points, you have a super keeper. This relationship is clean and green. Keep it going. Don't let go of that relationship. Whatever you do, that is a good one. A very good relationship where you share common thoughts, ideas, dreams, everything. And there's a lot of respect. I happen to know a few people out there who have wonderful relationships like this. One person in particular that I hope will call in tonight. And by the way, before we continue, I'd love to say happy birthday to Kathleen and a special hello to Pat and to all my friends in Central Florida, Palm Bay and Melbourne listening tonight. Now, if you have scored 35 to 55 points, well, you've got toxic scouts out there looking for possible dump sites. This is the time to step in and straighten out this relationship before it gets too bad. Because once you start making a step, it can be impossible to fix. Once it gets started, it's really very difficult to fix. So what you want to do is you definitely want this to get going immediately, working on this relationship, which we are going to go into a little bit later, the things that we can do. It's really nice to take tests, and it's really nice to, find out about all of these things, but what do? So we're going to go into that for a few minutes tonight. If you ended up with 56 to 80 points, you definitely have a toxic dump in formation already. And it's time to call in the EPA and get that cleaned out. It's time for you to read these books that I recommend to you. It's time, if you want, to give me a call. And we can talk, or you can go to my website, which I'll talk about later. If you have scored 81 to 181 points, you've got a toxic dump in action. Really serious, really heavy, and really bad news. And this is what we want to talk about and what we want to prevent in the future. Now, what is a toxic partner or a toxic mate or a toxic spouse? Now, you see, toxic relationships, as you well know, not only are in your home, in your love relationship, but they're in your work. They're with friendships. I've experienced a few of them myself that were great, great teachers. And some of them have been work-related, and more have been friend-related. So these things, there's other tests in this book, Toxic Relationships, to cover this. But let's talk tonight about toxic partners. Since my focus is on relationships, and I am a relationship consultant, so that's what we're going to talk about. Toxic partners are number one. They're very insensitive to your personal needs and requests. The only thing they care about is what they need. And it is your duty as their partner to fulfill their needs. They're constantly needing the stroking, the ego stroking, the ego building. And they're never there for you. Anytime, you know, oh, I want to talk about me. So, number two, a toxic partner is constantly giving verbal abuse through criticism. Nothing is ever quite right. The way you look, the way you speak, the way you act, the way you clean, the way you cook, do laundry, fold or put away clothes, arrange closets, vacuum, whatever it is, it just is never quite right. There's constant criticism. If you gain a single pound or lose a pound, whatever, that they don't like, there's criticism on that. There's constant criticism of friends, criticism of your work, everything. A toxic partner is extremely self-absorbed and very, very demanding. Several years ago, I had a client. She was married to an alcoholic, and she loved this alcoholic very, very much and put up with more problems than anybody could put up with because she loved this person. And what she did was she saw within this man, she saw what he could be. Not what he was, but what he could be. She was using positive manifestation here, but it doesn't work in these situations. And the thing that turned her around the most, it's always one thing that will get you, one final straw that breaks the camel's back. And her situation was she loved classical music. And she was listening, could never listen to it, could only listen to country music. And so when her husband was at work, she would listen to her records. This was a long time ago. This was when tapes were coming out. And so she would play those old records. And he came home early one night. And she had the record playing, and he walks over, and he snaps it off without lifting the needle off the record, completely ruins the record, and walks off and goes gets a beer. Well, that was kind of the epiphany for her. She finally woke up that this something here is wrong with this picture. This isn't working. This isn't right. And before this happened so many times, he would come in and snap off the TV, whatever she was watching, and put on what he wanted to watch, and that was it. It didn't matter where in the show they were, whatever. 2 minutes left. In the end, his really exciting, too bad. So this lady finally woke up and left the relationship finally. So she also remarried him again in the future, but it never worked out because he basically was not willing to change. And unfortunately, the gentleman passed away before he could make a lot of changes in his life. But he was a good man. He just had a lot of major baggage, major problems, number one being alcoholism. Toxic partners hurt and confuse their mates. I had another client, and this was relatively recent. She would go out, and her husband met her in a club. And she was all dressed up, all decked out, all made up, hair, everything, and he just fell head over heels. Well, needless to say, they got together, made a commitment, had a marriage, and suddenly everything changes. All of a sudden, makeup is forbidden. No wife of his is going to wear any amount of makeup. Well, she went along with it. But one day she got upset and wanted to wear some makeup. They were going out. And she came out with the makeup on, and he took a rag, a nasty mildewed rag that she had been wiping up spots with, and wiped the makeup off her face, grabbed a hold of her hair, and scrubbed her face with this filthy mildew rag. And then when they go out, she would tell me he constantly looks at other women who make up, like I used to. Very interesting. It goes into our next factor, which spouses consistently change the rules in the middle of the game. Toxic spouses will change the rules. You think you've got it down. And I know a client of mine recently that is now extremely happy had that. The guy would make a certain set of rules, and she would work and work to get everything just the way he wanted. And then all of a sudden, that's not what he wanted at all. The rules were all changed, and he never let her know. And he kept her consistently on the edge doing this to her. And that goes into the next one. He devalued, disrespected. And this is done deliberately. Everyone makes mistakes. Everyone has bad days. Everyone can be inconsiderate in a relationship, but not always. To devalue or disrespect your mate or your partner deliberately cannot be tolerated. And each and every one of you know how that goes. I don't need to give you examples of that. The seventh factor is that toxic partners want to control all areas of the partner's life. And as you've seen this, as we've been through the first seven of these were definitely control issues. Controlling through criticism, never doing things right. They want to control the way the laundry was done, the way the food was cooked, the way the person was dressed, who they spoke to, who their friends were, ad nauseum. And I know there are folks out there who are very, very controlled. And it's time to wake up about this, because it doesn't get any better. This person is not going to wake up one day and say, hey, I've all been wrong, unless they have some kind of spiritual epiphany. And this rarely happens with toxic people. In rare cases, it has happened, but for the majority of cases, 99 out of 100, it's not going to happen. Definitely. You have to take the control back in your own life. You're a person of freedom. You were born. You're a child of the universe. You have a right to be here. You have a right to control your life, yourself. You need to share a life with people. You don't spend it. To spend it means that it lessens all the time. The more you spend, the more it's gone. You want to share a relationship. And being with a control freak, you don't share anything. And I know there are people out there that could tell me stories that would even curl my hair. Definitely. Number 8. Toxic partners refuse to take personal responsibility for anything. It's always someone else's fault. They always have an excuse. It's not their fault that they lost their job. If their boss wasn't so stupid, if their boss didn't try and tell them what to do, ad infinitum. In fact, it was so funny because my partner always has an expression. I was just, not that he says it, but that's what he says. You can always tell people that can't take personal responsibility. Many criminals of our times, well, I was just doing this, doing that. I call it the I was just syndrome. No, got to take that personal responsibility. And mature people, in mature and proper, fantastic relationships, will take responsibility for their actions. And they don't always have an excuse. Sometimes there's no excuse for what we do. There's no excuse on the planet. We just say, I screwed up. I'm sorry. That goes a long way. Number 9. Toxic partners never trust their partner to be faithful or to speak the truth. Now, this is an interesting one. Usually, when people are constantly accusing you of something, be it seeing someone else or lying, or especially when you're telling the truth, it's usually because this is something that they're doing. If they're doing it, they automatically, toxic people, assume everyone's doing it to them because they're doing it. So if anybody out there, you better change your tactic. People are finding out the truth. If you're constantly accusing someone out there about what they're doing or not doing, usually it focuses and mirrors right back to you. Number 10, very important. Toxic partners physically or verbally or both attempt to control their partner. And physical abuse does not just start out on the first date. It doesn't. It usually starts out with verbal abuse. You're so stupid. You're so dumb. You never do anything right. And then it begins to progress. And the partner doing the physical abuse becomes angrier and angrier at the victim. And if first, fists are formed. And that's the beginning of the physical abuse. When you see someone begin to curl their fist, it's time to really look at this relationship. Now, another thing that they will do is they will turn around and they will deny the verbal abuse. They can't deny the physical abuse. You've got the marks. But they will deny the verbal abuse. They'll accuse you of misunderstanding them, that you don't understand them, you don't understand what they're saying, you never listen. If you listened better, you would understand what they were saying. You make a mountain out of a molehill. Well, it's another one of the I was just syndromes. You cannot continue to accept these behaviors. And I know I have a lot of clients who are in the process of leaving relationships like this right now. And I have some that have successfully left. And not one of them regrets it, and not one of them wants to go back. But a question these questions that people ask all the time are, why do these people choose me? Well, there are reasons for this. Nice, non-toxic people will give off certain vibes that seem to attract toxic people to them, just like sharks that are attracted to splashing around in water or blood spilled in the water. Sharks are very attracted to that. And this nice women especially run into this situation. Nice women will listen to strange men's stories in lounges, clubs, restaurants. Strange men will come up and they'll start talking, and the stories and the nice people don't want to be rude. And they're probably thinking, oh, this person's so lonely, I'll be so kind and talk to them. And this, they're wearing that sign. And the shark types will always, without fail, read politeness and willingness to help another person as a weakness or as a come-on. This, to this day, I can't understand. But it works. And the woman wonders, what I say? What did I say? What did I do to give him the idea that I wanted him? And I myself have experienced this a lot of times, that you're polite and nice to people, strangers, especially strange guys. You give them the right time, and they think that you're ready to jump forward. You're into bone jumping. Well, some men also have the same problem. Non-toxic, nice guys attract women who need rescuing, but they won't stay rescued. They bring tons and tons of baggage with them from tons of failed relationships. And they continue through this new relationship to seek out situations that set them up for one more crisis, one after another crisis. And these men are constantly, constantly trying to rescue them. Well, many times the man finally gets very tired but being beat up or fighting unnecessary dragons. And in some cases, the woman finds another nice guy who listens better. Oftentimes, there are women out there that can use the victim role, especially if she's a shark and seeking out a meal ticket. These people do not give back to you. They will not, and they will not change. Anyone can find themselves in a needy situation. They find themselves in need due to the circumstances that they're in. It can happen to anyone. But these good people will give back to the helpers, and they'll stay rescued, if we have to use the word rescue this time. They'll stay rescued, and they'll go on to build a better life for themselves. and for their partners and for their families. And they, in turn, will help other people to escape from bad situations and to stay rescued. I always like that expression. You better stay rescued this time. Well, the important thing tonight, what I want to talk about, is what can a non-toxic person do, male or female? Rule number one, first and foremost, don't allow the anger to make you sink to a lower level and start acting like a shark yourself. Never again. I'll do unto others before they do unto me. Well, this attitude will eat your soul up eventually, and you'll take on the same attributes as the sharks. And you'll finally become a card-carrying member of the shark brigade. Instead, recognize the experience that you have gone through. Basically, is tuition in the school of hard knocks on University Earth. Secondly, you need to seek to empower yourself so it does not happen again. And this is extremely important, the empowerment of yourself so it does not happen again. Now, how do you do this? Let's say that you're a woman or a man in a very nasty, toxic relationship, but you don't want to end the relationship. What do you do? Well, you're going to have to plan first, prepare what you're going to say and do, and then you have to implement the changes. Now, I will tell you this. It is a difficult road, and oftentimes people need to seek counseling for this type of thing. Sometimes it's just something you can't do alone. These people are tough, but your first step is to openly communicate to the toxic person that your relationship is going to change and it will not be the same again. Well, timing is extremely essential on this. Do not choose a time that you're already engaged in a big argument with this man or this woman. They won't take you at face value anyway. They'll think your words are just a gut reaction to the current conflict. Instead, you have to choose a time. And you're going to have to take a time when it's peaceful and you're enjoying some peace and quiet with the person, which sometimes is there. And you're going to have to spoil your peace and quiet time. But you're going to have to choose a time that is calm and no current conflicts are going on. And the best thing to do is to state it very strongly, politely, but strongly. And an example is we are at the crossroads in our relationship where it's clear that neither of us have our needs met. It may be easier to simply end this relationship and start a new one, but I've decided to give it one last try. However, it's going to be on new terms. Our relationship will not be the same again. In order for me to try one last time, I will expect certain things that I have not been receiving from you. First, I will not accept your criticism of me. Second, I will not be yelled or screamed at anymore. And if you start to raise your voice or become critical of me, I will immediately remind you of this and I will leave the room. Third, I'm entitled to my opinions just as you are entitled to your opinions, and I expect the same respect that I try to give you. If you're critical or demean my opinions, I will point it out and I will calmly leave until you can apologize. Now, pick your battles on this. Do not make out a whole laundry list. Okay? Don't make out the whole laundry list of everything that you want on the first go-around. Your most important expectations. Remember, people cannot change what they do not recognize. And this is said by my partner and soulmate, Rick. He says this constantly. Now, it is always good to do this privately, because these type of people, if you say this in front of other people, oh, that's going to make one terrible, terrible situation. Do not do that, if at all possible. But do not debate your position, and do not defend it in any manner. Simply quit talking when you've stated your position. Quit talking. There's no more about it. It's done. It's over. It's said, and that's what is. Now, what is defending your position? This is easy to do. I'm not going to accept criticism or ridicule any longer because it hurts my feelings, or because it's demeaning to me, or because you always do it. Those are examples of defending your position. You cannot do this. You state what is, what you expect, and what you will no longer deal with. And that's the end. Don't give reasons why, and don't defend. You, as a person out there, are entitled to be treated respectfully by your partner. And you don't have to defend your stance. The first part of the statement, I will not be criticized or ridiculed any longer, is all that you need to say. You can't rush this, okay? And I recommend highly you do this when you're alone. Even if you have to make a date. Next Saturday at 7 o'clock, I want to talk with you. And I want to talk with you about something very, very important to us. Well, the person will be so curious, but don't you dare explain further what it is, because you're giving away your power, and it's very important that you don't give the person an idea ahead of time. Do not use an audience to do this. It's always easy when you've been a victim to be around and have a girlfriend or someone with you when you say these things, but do not do it, because it will only cause problems. And if this person is abusive, number one, you shouldn't even be trying to fix this at this time. You should not be with this person. I recommend that people in abusive relationships get out quickly, very quickly. Does that mean that things can't change in the future? No, it doesn't. Many times things don't change in abusive relationships because the person has so many problems, the abuser, that it just is too much for them to change. But the person's curiosity will probably cause him to want to make the meeting a lot sooner. And if you're not a talker, and if you can't talk to the person, write a letter. Keep it short and keep it concise and to the point. Be specific. Email it. If you're doing your email and everything, email him a letter. Don't blame or point the finger at someone in the letter. Don't do this. No blame. Just emphasize the part to them that I think the relationship is worth working on. Or, I love so many things about you, and I want this to work. The only problem that might come up with writing is that tones of words can be misconstrued when read. So be very careful about this. You have to state your information in a calm but not a nagging tone. Men are very sensitive, as my partner always tells me, to tone. A man can pick up a nagging tone or a blaming tone so quickly. And even if he makes a counter move of yelling and screaming at you, you must remain calm. You will be the one to act like the adult, and you won't change your position despite what he's doing. He won't like it, but he'll absorb it. Number two, your opinion counts, and you will never be devalued again. And a lot of people have become so desensitized to criticism and critical comments coming from partners that they begin to accept it as a natural course, and it shouldn't be. From this point forward, you will not allow degrading comments to go unaddressed. Example, if you're told, "What do you know about it? Just leave it to those who understand." Okay? Or, "Just listen to me instead of rattling on and on for 5 minutes about something you don't understand." Or, "If you had a clue as to what you're talking about, you'd hear how foolish you sound." Or anything so similarly degrading. You're going to calmly state to this person without blame or contempt in your voice, "I realize my opinion may threaten you, because it's not the same as yours, but it's okay for you to have a different opinion from mine. You can have your opinion, and I can have mine. And no matter what you say, my opinion will not change. I'm glad we can differ on opinions and still be lovers or friends, lovers, whatever." If you're dealing with someone like this, you want to go on to reassure them. It's very important. These type of people need reassurance. "In fact, I like it that you have different opinions because it makes me appreciate you." There's that word, appreciate. "I still love you, even when you disagree with me, even when you think differently. I'm simply expecting you to give me the same courtesy." Don't compromise and don't bargain. It's just what is. Then leave the room or end the phone conversation. If there's any argument and disagreement, if they get combative verbally, do not engage. Do not fight back. It's all a matter of fact. That's my position. You'll have to deal with it. I'm not changing, period. Never, ever surrender or apologize for having your own opinion. I have heard over the years so many women continually say, "I'm sorry." "Well, I'm sorry, but I don't agree." "I'm sorry." No, no, I'm sorry. They just have to deal with it. You're not sorry. You have a right. You don't have to ask forgiveness from anyone.